As the presidential campaign heats up, we're hearing more about the candidates' economic policy proposals. And there's one that both the Republican and Democratic presidential nominees seem to have in common: eliminating federal taxes on tips.
But I said to her, let me just ask you a question. Would you be happy if you had no tax on tips? She said, what a great idea. I got my information from a very smart waitress. That's better than spending millions of dollars. And everybody loves it. Waitresses and caddies and drivers.
When I am president, we will continue our fight for working families of America, including to raise the minimum wage and eliminate taxes on tips for service and hospitality workers.
This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Lucy May. What does ending taxes on tips really mean, and how would it impact workers and the economy? Joining me now are Policy Matters Ohio tax policy researcher Bailey Williams. Thanks for being here, Bailey.
Hi, Lucy. Thanks for having me.
We appreciate it. And Wins Cafe chef and proprietor Roland Eliason. Welcome, Roland.
Thank you. It's great to be here.
Great to have you. Bailey, both former President Donald Trump and Vice President Kamala Harris, as we heard in those clips, are talking about eliminating taxes on tipped wages. What do we know about the policies of each of these campaigns?
Actually, that's a great question. We don't know very much at all. There's the policy details when it comes to no tax on tips is very sparse from both campaigns. One example, we don't know if this would apply to the income tax or payroll taxes. There are big implications for whether exempting tip wages from these taxes and the implications for the people who pay these taxes. For one, about 40% of tip workers don't pay income taxes because of they don't make enough, and then after the standard deduction and credits like that, they don't have a tax liability. So really, this policy really wouldn't help them that much. And then if we're talking about payroll taxes, there's implications for the solvency for Medicaid and Social Security. So there's a lot of policy questions and details that need to be answered when it comes to this policy.
Well, and Bailey, if we're talking about payroll taxes too, wouldn't that have big implications for how much an employee is paying into Social Security and could collect later?
Exactly. Yes, they have implications of whether they would qualify after the fact, whether when they're ready to retire and collect Social Security or Medicare, if those tip wages are exempt, and if they're being paid solely through their tips and they're not qualified through their payments, that's a serious complication for them later down the road.
Roland, what would something like this mean for tipped workers at your restaurant?
Well, it would definitely put more money in their pocket immediately. My concern is just how it affects the dynamic of the restaurant as a whole. The service staff, the hospitality staff would certainly go nuts for it, even though, you know, a lot of them still would like to make sure that they have that income documented just for, you know, life instances of going to get loans or buying a car, you know, being able to prove they have the income and they pay into that. But then again, on the flip side, like you said, you're not paying these things into these programs. So in the long run, it doesn't seem like it would work in people's favor as much as the knee-jerk reaction would suggest. Mm.
Roland, if I understand correctly, you're a proponent of raising the minimum wage for tip workers, right? Why do you think that's a better approach?
I'm a proponent of eliminating tipping in the service and hospitality sector entirely. As a restaurant owner, as a chef, it's in my interest to be able to compensate somebody based on the job that they're able to do. So I admit raising minimum wage would be one thing that would help that, because it would force our hand almost as an industry and make us look at these business setups to where our compensation model better fits what we try to do and to take care of our employees.
Hmm. And Bailey, many economists say there are other better ways to help tipped workers, like the earned income tax credit or the child tax credit. What do you think about those two approaches?
Oh, yeah, those are much better solutions to the same end goal that we're trying to accomplish here with these policies, which is really making sure working families have more money in their pockets at the end of the day. Expanding the EITC, the child tax credit, while raising the minimum wage, That's the exact policy answers that we and solutions that we already have on the books. We can just expand them, ready and accessible, and we don't have to worry about potential pitfalls from expanding or exempting tips, such as wage shifting around that could lead to people to just tax avoidance among certain professions.
I guess the problem, Bailey, though, is, you know, as Roland says, there's some immediate thinking of, hey, this would be more money in my pocket right away. And that's not the case with the earned income tax credit or child tax credit, is it?
That in its current capacity, that's true. However, as we saw when the child tax credit and the earned income tax credit were expanded under the American Rescue Plan Act, people who were eligible to claim those benefit or those credits did have the option to receive them in monthly installments. So they could see a monthly boost if these expansions were taken on in Congress. I'm pretty sure that the current or the House version of the child tax credit that was expanded had a monthly payment version that allowed the claimants to get that in that way instead of just when they get their tax returns. Hmm.
We're talking about a proposal to end federal taxes on tipped wages. We looked for a supporter of this proposal to join our discussion. We know you're out there, so give us a call at 513-419-7100, or you can email talk@wvxu.org. We did get an email from Steve in Oakley. Steve writes, "Seems to be an odd request, considering we come from an era of politicos shouting as an election day nears, everyone needs to pay their fair share. A report on NPR last week quoting an economist said this policy would cost an excess of $100 billion in revenue for the federal government over 10 years. Creating two classes of taxpayers seems neither fair or a smart move from an overall economy standpoint." Bailey, what do you think about that? What could a change like this mean for the country financially overall?
That's a good point. Anytime that you have a tax exemption or cut, you do have the consequence of that, which is the revenue loss. I would say that we could offset revenue or $100 and $200 million. That's a pretty sizable amount of money, so it's a serious consideration. But to his point of creating two classes of taxpayers here, or one similar wage professions based off income. What other professions are similarly situated, like tipped workers, when it comes to their wages at the end of the day? Teachers, other fast food workers who might not be tipped or paid a tipped wage, but they make about the same amount of money, and yet you have one who is able to get a tax benefit, whereas the other class doesn't, for really not a really great justifiable reason here. So it does create a little unfairness there in that element, which could lead to ways that these professionals would try to shift some of their compensation to be tipped so they can get some of that take-home pay slightly increased, which, like I said, this leads to the complications and critiques of the policy.
Yeah, and I know we want to talk about those in a little bit. Roland, what do you think? Do you have concerns when it comes to fairness and kind of, you know, you mentioned you think all the tipped wages should be eliminated, you should pay a living wage and not eliminate this whole tip credit and tip thing. Do you have concerns about fairness and kind of creating different classes of workers?
Well, absolutely. I mean, I worry about the implications it has just in hospitality alone, because if you look at traditional restaurant setups, you have basically three instances where you're paying people. You're either paying people salaried positions. Those are usually managers, people of, you know, that have been around for a long time that are salaried. They have a lot of responsibilities. You have your tip supplemented employees, your servers, counter help, you know, hospitality are, and then you have your production, you know, chefs, culinary teams, bakery production, people that aren't eligible for a tipped wage, really, if you look at it in the scheme of things. And it creates disparity where it's going to be even harder for me to find skilled chefs that don't want to be tipped if this goes into effect. But it's going to be even harder to find skilled chefs because they know that the people on the other side of the pass from them, most of their income's not being taxed. And they're already making a sizable bit more than your traditional line cook or chef. So that's the discrepancy I worry about, is that you're going to have a staff that's harder and harder to fill because of the inequity in how they're paid. You're not being paid on skill. You know, this isn't a credit for any other reason than to try to mobilize voters in November. And that's what I see it as, but you're going to have it ripple through the industry in a way that's detrimental to operators.
Bailey, is that what you see this as? Do you think this is more about mobilizing voters, this proposal, than it is about, you know, economic reforms?
I try not to touch too much on the politics of it, but looking at it from the economic side of it, I don't see this as a sound economic policy. While it is an appeal to, it's a populist appeal, there are better ways to get working families money, put money in working family pockets. At the end of the day, we have the earned income tax credit, we have the child tax credit. We can explain and articulate these policies in a meaningful manner and ensure that at the end of the day, the money reaches those families.
Well, we're going to continue our conversation after a short break. And later in the program, we'll talk about becoming a parent later in life, the downsides and the benefits. This is Cincinnati Edition. This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Lucy May. We're talking about the proposal to end federal taxes on tipped wages, an idea that economists on both ends of the political spectrum dislike. My guests are Policy Matters Ohio tax policy researcher Bailey Williams and Wins Cafe chef and proprietor Roland Eliason. Do you like this proposal, or do you have other questions or comments about it? Give us a call at 513-419-7100, or you can email talk@wvxu.org. Bailey, you referenced this a little bit earlier, but when I was preparing for this, I read some papers on this idea that say it really wouldn't help many tipped workers because many of them don't earn enough to pay income taxes anyway, at least if this is the elimination of the income tax on tipped wages. Can you talk a little bit more about that? How does that play out for tipped workers across the country?
Sure. So based off of your income, tipped workers tend to be lower income workers as is. So when we take into consideration the standard deduction, which exempts a certain amount of your income from taxation, that chops a big amount of income that would be subject to tax for these low income workers. So when you consider that, these workers aren't going to pay taxes on their tips or their wage regardless. So exempting a portion of their income from taxation does them no good at the end of the day. What would do those workers some benefit is expanding the earned income tax credit, which is refundable, which is a credit that would put money back into their pockets as a refund. That would be a good policy that would actually help these workers.
Well, and Bailey, let me ask you this, because I've also read that a change like this could reduce the federal government's tax revenue by $150 billion to $250 billion between 2026 and 2035. So, and I'm going to confess, econ was not my strong suit in college. How could this be almost no help to workers, but create such big problems for the federal government?
Oh, because we're looking at potential tax avoidance and shifting from other employment. Now, granted, there will be some benefit for traditional tip workers who could see some of their wages or income exempted from taxation. However, we could see also other professions, high earning professions, like lawyers, accountants, who might take some upfront fee for some of their services and they get, say, tipped on the back end of whenever they complete their services that they were contracted for, that portion of the pay that they got for their services would then be exempt from taxation. And that could create a nightmare in terms of tax evasion and avoidance. It wouldn't be a legal evasion at that point. It would be legal tax avoidance. And that could be a problem for collecting revenue for the federal government.
As an economist, do you think that's a big risk that people could restructure their income in that way to take advantage of this if it were to become a policy?
Oh, absolutely. There's for every loophole, there's a creative accountant or lawyer who is willing to try to test the limits and exploit that loophole to get a couple of dollars exempted from taxation. Absolutely. That's a huge problem.
Well, let me ask you this too, Bailey, because Senator Ted Cruz already introduced a bill that would eliminate taxes on tips. His staff says the IRS would spot this wage restructuring for high-income people and go after them for fraud. What do you think about that?
We saw how Senator Cruz was kind of opposed to the IRS going after high-earning tax avoidance from billionaires with increased enforcement from the IRS passed with the Inflation Reduction Act. So I'm not entirely sure if that's going to work out through how he proposes in terms of the enforcement front, but guardrails is something that's lacking in both his proposal, and then Trump and Harris's proposals, in terms of making sure that if this policy was enacted, that it's done in a right way that benefits those who it's meant to intend.
And I think Vice President Harris's campaign has said we're going to have guardrails, but they haven't spelled out what those would be, if I understand correctly.
Exactly.
Yeah. Roland, did you want to weigh in on this? And also, I'm wondering what you're hearing from your employees about this idea, if they're talking about it at all. Do they like the idea for that short-term gain and some extra money in their pockets up front?
I have a unique restaurant, honestly, because a lot of my staff, at least my front of the house staff is younger. We don't have a lot of legacy staff after COVID. A lot of our experienced servers in the restaurant industry, especially up where I am, got into other things. But this is a generation that they're not as keen on the, you know, whims of customers sometimes to tip. They're more into knowing what they're going to be able to budget every week and knowing what's coming in and things like that. Now at my restaurant, they work for tips because we're a nice restaurant, and the income level for my front of the house staff is definitely above the area norm. Though I would not call server pay low income anymore, which is what it's been referenced as. I've known several professionals that have gotten out of other professions because quite simply they can make more money working less hours working in the front of the house or the hospitality sector of this industry making tips. And that's, but my staff especially are more of the budget minded to where it's like, okay, you know, I know I'm going to make $20, $25, $30 an hour. I really think they would shift to that. And it's just uncertain. A lot of them, I introduce it. I bring it to these guys. Hey, this is out there. You should know about it. We're going to inform everybody about it. You know, I don't hide it under the rug somewhere where it's like, oh, they're going to try to do this and stir everybody up. But they also want what's best for the restaurant as well, because that's where they make their cash. So that it's a mixed group of people, but a lot of my younger generation, 30 and under, I would say, aren't real keen on it because they don't quite understand it all the way. But also, we're actively trying to move to something that's a better compensation model. Mm-hmm. So that's how it fits into the restaurant. Around the area, around the Dayton area, you know, people are hot about it, but they don't trust it. They're waiting for the backside of this to come. It's like, oh, we're going to eliminate tips, and then this other thing is going to happen that's going to pretty much negate that.
Hmm. Yeah, they worry that it might be sound too good to be true, sort of thing.
Absolutely. I mean, it has been kind of a calling card of once something great happens for the restaurant business, then somebody comes back behind it and negates it.
Hmm.
You know it. You talk about, you know, delivery services. Oh, this is great. We can boost our income, and then it's 30% off the top.
Yeah.
Well, it's for the restaurant. So
yeah,
this
yeah.
is what we see.
Yeah. That's an interesting point. Bailey, as I mentioned, you know, when we came back from our break, economists across the political spectrum really seem opposed to this idea. Why do you think it seems so popular with some service workers and their union leaders?
That's a great question. I think it's because it's designed to appeal to them, and they think at the end of the day it will provide them some economic relief. Whereas I think that those industries, workers in those industries, they felt the crunch with inflation after the pandemic, and they're desperate for some type of relief. And I think that with the context in Nevada where Vice President Harris endorsed the no tax on tips, the first part of what she said was increasing the minimum wage as well. It's this two-parter that she was really pushing forth, that it's all part of this economic relief platform that these unions are really pushing for in particular. So there, I think it's really a part of a broad economic relief thing geared towards how can we help workers. And increasing the minimum wage is one of the ways to do that. This culinary union in Nevada viewed exempting tips as a way to do it, help out their workers as well, which could be the case for their workers, but it's not overall the best, what's best for the country and what's best for working families in terms of tax policy that can give them some relief.
That's a good point, Bailey, because while we don't know a whole lot about the proposal from former President Trump or the proposal from Vice President Harris, we do know that Vice President Harris has combined a higher minimum wage as part of this, and that's not something that I believe former President Trump has mentioned. Roland, what do you think? I mean, you talked about how your restaurant, the servers can earn a whole lot in tips. I'm sure that not every restaurant is that way. If the check value is a whole lot lower, or if it's maybe just breakfast or lunch and the checks are lower, then folks aren't making as much in tips. So I'm sure it differs based on the type of restaurant and the prices and the check totals and that sort of thing. Why do you think this is so popular in places like Nevada, where Vice President Harris latched onto this idea and talked about it, when there are so many question marks around the whole thing?
Well, it's a knee jerk. I mean, it makes you feel good. Somebody was going to make sure that, you know, whatever income you're bringing in, you're going to be able to keep most of it, which is what most Americans would like for. We've just seen taxes chew up chunks and chunks of paychecks, where that money, if you really want to stimulate the economy, a lot of people, especially in the restaurant business, they spend their money around where they're at. You know, it's my employees shop in the small villages. When I worked in Cincinnati, the servers, when I worked at several of those restaurants, they went to other restaurants and ate where they spent their money. They went to little shops and spent their money. So they see the impact in their community of having more money to put back into their community, take care of their kids, you know, their elderly parents or whatever the situation may be. So it's appealing on the forefront when they look at it. But then when they start to talk about it, there's a disparity there, I think. You know, it's going to be attractive, especially to servers, because they make such a high income and they see how much money is taken out. And in this day and age where, okay, traditionally restaurants, you know, you dealt with a lot of cash. Now we're dealing with a lot more credit cards and credit card tips, which are more easily tracked than cash tips. You know, most times when you talk about cash tips, you have to say, oh, you know, I made this much money in cash every night and claim it. And that just doesn't happen. That's just the way it is, because then they have to pay taxes on that. And some restaurants where you walk out with cash every night versus other restaurants where your tips are paid out on your payroll check, I mean, that can be big for people. You're talking about claiming several hundred dollars in cash versus not having to pay it if you don't claim it at all. So we've seen the percentage of credit card usage go up massively. So it's going to be really appealing because they've lost that cash option. Mm-hmm. Yeah. That makes sense. So that's why I think it's a little bit more appealing to people these days, because especially servers who have been in the industry for a long time, they've seen their take home go down with the rise of credit cards and everything else that's happening. But I mean, really, it's just popular, I really think, is a knee-jerk reaction, because when you sit there and you talk about $250 billion taken out of the economy and stuff's already not getting done in the country, you know, we just see it splurge out wherever and not staying in our communities. I think it'll fizzle out. Like she said, like, you know, Bailey said,
Bailey, tax policy is going to be a top priority for Congress when the next administration takes office, whoever wins the White House. The Trump-era tax cuts are set to expire. What do you think we're likely to see from lawmakers?
That's a great question. I think it really depends on the makeup of Congress and who we see in the White House. I thought that there was going to be some decent progress and bipartisanship on extending some of the Trump tax credits. We saw a House bill I referenced earlier that included some of the expansions of the business credits that were included, and as well as a meaningful child tax credit expansion. Like I said, it passed the House and then stalled in the Senate recently. So I will probably see something along those lines in terms of a, that'll be the starting point. But yeah, since these credits are expiring, it will be a major priority for the next Congress and the next administration coming in. I think it really just depends on who's in the White House and who's in control of the House and Senate.
Well, I have been talking with Policy Matters Ohio tax policy researcher Bailey Williams and Wins Cafe chef and proprietor Roland Eliason. Thank you both so much for your time today. Up next, more people are choosing to become parents later in life. We'll discuss the benefits and the downsides. This is Cincinnati Edition.